The Iron Pirate, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Chapter 1. Charmed Lives. The sea's face that morning rose and dipped in an endless, formidable swell. There were no crests, and the deep troughs gleamed in the early light like molten glass. A heavy mist drifted above the water, broken here and there into clearings, while close by it barely skimmed the surface. In a few days it would be August, but in the Baltic the dawn air was already like a knife, a threat of the winter which would soon grope down from the Gulf of Finland to torment ships and sailors alike. Occasionally scattered groups of gulls and other seabirds lifted on the successive swirls like broken wreaths, pale in the dull light, unimpressed by the steepness of the troughs, which in happier times could hide one fishing boat from another, even when they lay less than half a cable apart. From end to end, the Baltic had been one of the busiest waterways in the world, where fishermen and coasters, timber ships and colliers created their own patterns and trails. Now, apart from a few wary, neutral Swedish vessels, the waters were the hunting ground, and a burial place for friend and foe alike. It was 1944, and for many the fifth year of war. The sea noises were muted or dampened by the mist. It was like a wilderness, an abandoned place for a while longer on this particular morning. The gulls which floated silently and waited to begin their search for food were, as usual, the first to sense they were no longer alone. To begin with, it was more of a sensation than a sound, not close enough to be a beat or throb, just a tremor through the water, which soon made the birds rise, flapping and mewing, disturbed, anxious, yet unwilling to quit their territory. Had there been an onlooker, he would have been startled by the suddenness of the ship's appearance, first a great shadow, and then, with a contemptuous thrust of her high, raked bows, she swept through the mist, parting it and cleaving the steep swell with impressive ease. Although her three screws were throttled down to reduced speed, she threw a sharp white moustache from her stem, which spattered against her faded camouflage paintwork to give a hint of her true power. As she thrust across the grey water, she grew in size and strength, but her four twin turrets and towering bridge structure did nothing to spoil the perfection of her lines. She was a heavy cruiser, one of the most powerful afloat, yet she retained all the dash and grace of a destroyer. No figures explored her wet decks, and only occasional movements at gun mountings and on her bridge gave any sign of life. For a few moments she lay, fully exposed in a clearing, like a graceful animal crossing a glade in a forest, and the reluctant dawn made her upper works shine like glass and touched the flag, a solitary patch of scarlet, with its black cross and swastika. Before the mist closed in again, the cruiser's secondary armament seemed to come to life, the slender muzzles in their separate mountings around the superstructure training and lifting as if to sniff out a possible enemy. Each gun crew was fully aware of the cost of carelessness, the lack of constant vigilance. In these contested waters there was rarely a second chance. Closed up at their various action stations, as they had been for most of the night, there were some 950 officers and men scattered throughout her armoured hull. Separated by the needs of safety, and yet welded into a solitary team to fit the demands of their ship, the wishes of their commanding officer. At the rear of the open bridge, alone for a few more precious minutes in his Spartan sea cabin, Kapitän zur See Dieter Hechler sat at his desk, outwardly relaxed from long practice, but with his mind recording each movement and untoward sound beyond his small refuge. He rarely visited his spacious quarters below, except in harbour, for time taken in running to the bridge in any emergency was time lost. He rarely thought about it. This was his world, and had been for the 18 turbulent months since he had been given the honour of this command, one of the remaining crack cruisers in the German Navy. In a moment or so, Victor Teil, his second in command, would call him on the red handset above the sea cabin's crumpled bunk. Then Hechler would get to his feet, take a quick look round to ensure he had forgotten nothing, and walk to the bridge. They would greet him with varied feelings, relief, doubt, dislike even, but all would accept him as their captain.